Morning from the Financial Times. I'm Mark Filippino coming to you with a very special edition of the FT News Briefing. So a couple of weeks ago, the FT held its annual weekend festival at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. And the briefing got to do a live show there, which was very different for me, but it was honestly, it was really fun. In fact, we had so much fun, we wanted to make sure that you all had the opportunity to hear it. It's got a news-themed game show and a preview of a new FT podcast coming out later this month. So, without further ado, here we go.
So, to my left is U.S. Managing Editor Peter Spiegel. Let's round of applause for Peter Spiegel. Woo! Woo! Peter Spiegel, I think, is the guy who signs my paychecks. So, Peter Spiegel is today's winner. Congrats, Peter.
Thank you, Mark.
Another ground rule. There are no points. There are no winners. There are no losers.
Wait, that wasn't told.
No, I'm sorry about that. I'm a millennial, so everyone's going to get a participation trophy, and we're all going to go out for ice cream. We also have Janine Gibson.
Hello.
Who is the new editor of FT Weekend. Welcome. This is your house now, kind of. How do you feel to be in your new post?
Well, it's quite daunting because Alex done quite a good job. Look at all these lovely people. Yeah.
No pressure. You have to win.
Hillary Clinton's coming. Have you seen that?
Yeah. I'm surprised people are here so early and also going to make that. So, like, that's kudos to you guys. And lastly, we have Ethan Wu, who writes our Unhedged newsletter, which is about markets. And he's also releasing the Unhedged podcast on June 13th.
That's right.
After our trivia round, we're going to talk a little bit about that podcast. Peter and Janine are going to gracefully leave the stage so we can do that.
Gracefully.
So, getting to the game. Our first round is called Quote Quiz. And what I am going to do is I'm going to read a quote, and you are going to have to determine whether it is from an actual U.S. politician or if it's from the TV show Veep, starring Julia Louis-Dreyfus, which came out in 2012, so this is a little dated. Bear with me.
Can we just say also that none of us up here have any idea what you're doing, so...
Oh, yeah, no. They have no clue what the questions are. This is all fresh to them.
Or even what the games are. Okay.
Yeah. So the first quote is, who else has a bucket full of senators? Who else has a bucket full of senators? Now, you have to tell me if that's a real U.S. politician who said it, or if it's from the TV show Veep.
Do we jump in?
Buzz?
Yeah, sure, buzz. Raise your hand, whatever you want.
All right, so famously Mitt Romney said, binder fill of women. Uh-huh. I suspect it is a riff on that, so I'm going to say Veep.
Ethan?
I'm going with Veep.
Janine?
I don't think it's sweary enough for Veep, because although I'm British and I don't listen to American politicians all the time, I have seen Veep many, many times, so I'm going to say real.
Really? Okay, so the answer is Veep, and we actually have the clip that we're going to play.
That door should be half its height, so that people can only approach me in my office on their mother knees. I can't lose Doyle. Who else has a bucket full of senators?
Good morning, everyone. Hope you were ready for that. That's right, and in fact, it is based, because this did come out in 2012, this is based off Mitt Romney's comment of,
you go. You're going down.
Fine, but I feel vindicated. If he'd done the full quote, I would have known.
I'm sorry. They'll be much more complete from here. So, question two. The second quote of the day is, this is not a First Amendment issue because we're not trying to ban booty videos.
God, do I have to go first again?
I'm going real. I'm going real.
Real.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's 500 people in the house. Someone said something like that.
Okay. I'm gonna go with real as well.
Fine, I will go against the grain and say Veep, because I'm already losing.
It is real.
Hey.
It is Florida Senator Marco Rubio.
Yeah, it checks out. Yeah.
And it is from it's about TikTok. So we have that clip. We'll play that now.
This is not a First Amendment issue because we're not trying to ban booty videos. I don't know if there's a better term for it, but that's not what we're trying to ban.
Funnily enough, Marco Rubio is an expert on booty videos.
Booty videos,
that was not well known. Yeah.
For the third quote, I love Venn diagrams. It's just something about those three circles. I love Venn diagrams. It's just something about those three circles.
I think that was me in the third grade.
That's not fair. You don't do Ethan quotes.
I can hear Julia Louis-Dreyfus saying that. I think that's Veep.
So Veep?
I'm going Veep.
Veep.
Now it's my turn to go against the grain. I think that's probably real.
Okay. It is actually the real vice president, Kamala Harris. Oh. Let's play that.
I love Venn diagrams. I really do. I love Venn diagrams. It's just something about those three circles.
I mean, the diagrams are two circles.
Are you sure that isn't Veep?
It's so wholesome. I don't even know what the context is, but it feels like something out of Parks and Recreation. Okay, so after the first round, someone I think is winning, but I don't know who, so we're going to go to the second round.
I think it's very important not to keep score.
No, I'm winning.
You're winning?
Yes.
Spiegel's winning. Round of applause for Peter Spiegel.
Oh.
Peter Spiegel.
The second round is two truths and a lie, or as we like to call them in DC, alternative facts. So I'm going to take a little break here because I've embarrassed myself enough. And you guys are going to read the first question. So that's the one on the top. And then you'll have to determine which one is the alternative fact.
Do I start?
Sure do.
All right, first question. A video has been widely shared from King Charles III's coronation in London that shows a shaded figure in the congregation of Westminster Abbey that has been described on social media as the Grim Reaper. A number of others suggested the figure could have been the spirit of Charles's ex-wife, Princess Diana, or his mother, Queen Elizabeth II.
Ethan.
Opinion polls for King Charles III were suffering leading up to the coronation. Hundreds of thousands of people on social media claim to have seen an image of the Virgin Mary in Charles' robes. They all say that, one, the dots resemble the mother of Christ, and it was a message from the king.
Janine.
Welsh composer Sir Carl Jenkins has denied claims he was the Duchess of Sussex in disguise during his viral appearance at the King's coronation.
Okay. One of these is true?
One of these is the lie. Oh.
Two of them are true.
Two of them are true. Two truths and a lie.
Yikes.
Oh, no. What was yours again?
Okay, so to recap, we've got the Grim Reaper. Yeah, Grim Reaper. We've got the Virgin Mary in the robes.
And I've got Carl Jenkins as actually
Meghan Markle. And they've got Carl Jenkins in the
So I'm going to go with Ethan as the lie.
Okay.
Virgin Mary just seems a little bit too Catholic for the Church of England to have this.
That's what I was thinking, too. And they're Protestants.
Janine?
I know this one is true because I am British. And I watched all of the coronation, and Carl Jenkins was all we looked at. He was the they'll show you a picture. He was the mad hair and moustache, sat next to Andrew Lloyd Webber, and the camera just kept cutting to him as everyone in the country went, who the hell is that?
Are you allowed to bring actual knowledge to this quiz show?
I'm enlightening the audience. You can cut it out.
So that is, the lie is the Virgin Mary in the robes. And we actually have a clip of the Carl Jenkins thing. So we're going to play that now.
You don't need to see it now. I've described it.
Yeah, I'm surprised that some people thought it was Meghan Markle in disguise. Someone wrote, I was there, wherever I was there to steal the crown jewels. I look this way all the time.
I love this story so much. Me and my producer were writing these questions, and we could not stop laughing at this poor, poor man who had to take to TikTok
to explain
to clear things up. Actually,
he's a really illustrious composer and very, very good.
Yes.
But he's also now Meghan Markle
in disguise. Now he's Meghan Markle in disguise, who apparently was trying to steal the crown jewels. Of course. Okay, second question of this round. You guys take it away, Peter.
Okay. Twitter co-founder Jack Dorsey has launched a new rival to Twitter called Blue Sky. Users on Blue Sky have started calling posts on Blue Sky skeets, which is a combination of sky and tweet. This has upset Elon Musk, who in retaliation this week announced that tweets will now be called scoots until Blue Sky forces a name change.
The Bluebird logo on Twitter's homepage and loading screen has been replaced with the Shiba Inu image associated with the Dogecoin meme coin cryptocurrency. The official Dogecoin account tweeted in response, "Very currency, wow, much coin, how money, so crypto."
Twitter's press email address is active again, at least to some extent. Going forward, it will automatically reply to journalists' inquiries with a single poop emoji.
All right, guys, what do you think?
God, I think all of those are true.
I think that's true, isn't it?
I think the dog is true. I've seen that on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I think
this is true.
I think the skeets thing is true, too.
I think it is true, too.
Okay, are you guys registering?
Yeah.
You guys, this is it. The skeets thing is, you think it's true. Okay, so the skeets thing is partially true. They are called skeets on Blue Sky.
Elon Musk did not
rename tweets.
So no points for anyone.
No points for anyone. No ice cream for anyone.
That wasn't fair, Mark.
I'm sorry. Yeah. They can't all be winners, right?
All right, no paycheck next week.
The third round is about markets. And the first clue that we're going to give actually features our colleague, Katie Martin. We'll play that now.
There we go.
Hi, I'm Katie Martin. I'm the markets editor here at the FT in London. And my question for you today is, Back in March, the London Metal Exchange discovered that a bunch of bags that it thought were full of nickel were in fact full of something else. What was it?
Oh, crap, I remember this story.
I think the answer is also nickel, but of a different grade. It was not the industrial grade nickel that's traded on the London Metals Exchange.
I'm going to say depleted uranium.
Okay. That's a bold one. Did not think that was going to be
in there. The Brits will like misplace radioactive things.
I'm going to say cut up strips of People magazine in the shape of dollar bills, but it might have been Ocean's 12.
None of you guys are right. Sorry. None of you guys are right. The answer is stones. They were filled with stones. They duped the London Metal Exchange by replacing nickel with stones, which makes me think that no one's checking the bags, which is super, super great. The next question does not feature Katie Martin. I'm going to read this one. And I actually don't know why this is a markets question, but here we go. Earlier this month, Italy held an emergency meeting after an unexpected price increase created a public outcry. What was it? I'll read that again. Ooh. Italy held an emergency meeting after an unexpected price increase created a public outcry. What was the outcry about?
Olive oil.
Or Parmesan.
Tiramisu.
Food is a great guess. definitely of the food variety. It was pasta. The price of pasta apparently has skyrocketed. Mm. It was up 17.5% in March, year on year. And the best part of the story, and I did not know this, apparently the average Italian citizen eats 23 kilograms or 50 pounds of pasta every year, which is like 10 pounds less than
that's
what I eat.
That's just James Fontanella Khan, actually.
Is that right? Okay, and then for our last bonus round question, right before you guys came up, I asked you guys to come up with a cryptocurrency name and sell me on it. I don't know if you guys could, but I'm interested to see what you came up with.
Well, you're a cover crypto.
Yeah, markets guy. What do you got?
To start.
I'm going to pitch you on a real cryptocurrency.
Oh, okay.
This is one that actually exists. It's called Filecoin. Mark, do you need to store files? You got a lot of stuff on your computer, right? Can I interest you in a cryptocurrency file storage solution? When the price of the cryptocurrency goes up, you get more storage. And when it goes down, you get less storage.
No.
That's a real cryptocurrency.
It's terrible. I'm not interested in all of them. I'm sorry, Ethan. You lose.
I thought there were no winners here.
That's right. Peter?
We didn't have any time to prepare for this. I'm because I am a consummate self-promoter, I'm going to go with Spiegelcoin.
Spiegelcoin, with your face on the...
Exactly.
You actually have a Slack icon with your face on it, right?
I'm not supposed to talk about all this stuff
in
public. Yes, the disadvantages are getting slightly overweight and losing its hair, but on the upside, has very strong opinions about things he knows nothing about. So
fantastic. And Janine?
I'm going to pitch you Scamcoin, which is a collective effort dedicated solely to exposing the scam that is feeding.
Janine is our winner of this round, and why not the entire game? Congratulations, Janine. Please have me back next year, even though I've made an ass of myself. All right, guys, so Janine and Peter are going to leave the stage.
Thank you very much.
Ethan, round of applause for these guys. Ethan and I are going to take the rest of the segment home and talk about your new podcast, Unhedged, which is coming out June 13th.
June 13th.
It's basically kind of the audio version of the newsletter, the award-winning newsletter, Unhedged, that you write with Rob Armstrong. And now you are my podcast competition, which makes you my mortal enemy. And
well, since Peter Spiegel is listening officially, we are all complimentary offerings within the broader FT audio suite.
That's right.
That's the paychecks. We weren't terribly creative with the name, so we just took the newsletter name and just, you know, copy-pasted it for the podcast.
So tell people what this what the new podcast is about, when it publishes, the basics.
Well, it's a twice-weekly markets and finance show. Katie Martin, other FT Markets luminaries are just going to be discussing sort of the big stories of the week, diving deep on, you know, some of our markets coverage. We have some of the best reporters in the world in all the major financial centers, and they're going to be on to sort of explain the big stories in finance. And it's going to be fun. It's going to be light. It's going to be 10 to 15 minutes, so quick as well.
Nice. And as I understand, you guys have been doing pilots to practice, kind of like practice rounds before the big launch. And we're going to play a clip of one of those pilots now, and you'll provide the context after.
Yeah, so this is with FT Alphaville reporter Alex Skaggs. We're talking about commercial real estate. It's one of the big risks people perceive to regional banks. You know, people are worried about downturns. And there's an inflammatory paper written by a very smart guy at NYU called The Coming Real Estate Office Apocalypse.
Okay.
That was his word. He did a lot of work on it and came up with apocalypse.
Got it.
And that's the context for this discussion.
All right, so we're going to play that now.
apocalypse is a big word.
Yeah.
To be fair.
Yeah. Like a mini transition apocalypse.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess every apocalypse is somebody else's opportunity. Right. I saw that in a sell side note the other day. Like a strategist was like, well, hey, the guys who bought residential mortgage-backed securities after the financial crisis did great.
Yep.
And I was like, oh no. Like, we've fallen back on this argument to say everything's okay. It's probably not a good sign. But
capitalism keeps rolling on.
Exactly. Listen, if there's blood in the streets, bye.
Yes.
I think the and you can correct me if I'm wrong, the kind of the point of this is to make markets, which can kind of be a daunting subject for someone like me who's not an expert, and make it more accessible and fun, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think another, you know, we wanted to bring the chit-chat that we hear around the FT office to kind of a broader audience.
Sure.
Like, you know, we're all in this every day, you know, 5 to maybe 7 days a week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have fun with it at the FT. And I think that's what makes the job fun. That's why people want to work there. And we wanted to bring some of that, you know, the chit-chat, the banter, what we're talking about, to kind of a broader audience.
Gotcha. Now, because we are journalists, we will speculate a little wildly about what are the top stories for the rest of the year and what you may be covering on the podcast from here on out.
Well, I imagine we'll be talking about the regional banks. I mean, yes. this seems to be the real story du jour. And I mean, one of the conversations we've been having
for people who who don't know the background of the regional banks, just quick and dirty, what's going on?
Well, Silicon Valley Bank, man.
Yes.
Run poorly, they failed. You know, and there have been a couple other bank failures since. Nothing huge. The JP Morgans and the Bank of America's, they seem fine.
Yep.
But it's those kind of smaller banks, regional banks, that loaded up on mortgage bonds and treasury bonds when interest rates were very low. They've gone up a huge amount in a very short period of time, and that's created losses for these banks. Some of them are not able to absorb those losses, and so they've fallen into the FDIC's waiting arms. But, you know, the question that we've been discussing at the FT is, so is it over, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think the last bank failure was, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago now?
Yes.
It's been a little bit. Is it going to roll on slowly, like the savings and loan crisis of, you know, a generation ago?
Yeah.
Or, you know, have we kind of passed the acute phase yet? I think that's really the debate that we're having. If I had to guess, if I had to speculate away completely wildly, I would say we're going to see more to fall.
Okay.
And you know, Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, was quoted in Bloomberg saying privately to bank officials, she expects more mergers ahead. Some of these smaller banks just don't necessarily have the balance sheets to survive this higher interest rate world, if this is really what we're in for the foreseeable future.
Is there any concern in the markets about all these mergers, especially because in the case of a bunch of these banks, they're being picked up by much larger banks?
Yeah. This really becomes like a public policy discussion.
Sure.
About too big to fail and, you know, all the echoes of 2008. I mean, I think it's pretty clear we're in a system where most banks are too big to fail. That, you know, the U.S. regulators have an interest in maintaining financial stability. And if that's their mandate, they can't let a lot of stuff fail. They're going to make it work one way or another. We've seen so far both public sector and private sector solutions where when a bank fails, sometimes the government will take it over fully. Sometimes, like with recently a bank with JP Morgan bought out, that was brokered by the government. But, it seems like a lot of banks are too big to fail these days.
Sure. Okay, so the bank crisis is one of the things that you're looking out for. What are some of the other ones?
You know, I'm really interested in what's going to happen with Chinese growth this year. They've set expectations low in terms of the growth target. 5% is what they've set for this year. You know, you set a low bar, maybe you overshoot it.
Because after the pandemic, they lifted their pandemic restrictions, there was a lot of anticipation that there was going to be huge growth, right?
Absolutely.
So this is kind of different.
Yeah, consumption has really bounced back a lot more slowly than a lot of folks were expecting. I remember I wrote a newsletter earlier this year about all the big banks, Goldman, JP Morgan, Bank of America, they're like, get in on this.
Yep.
This China rally is going to be crazy.
Yep.
And it's been okay. Mm-hmm. I think I called it ultimately forgettable. And you look at the stock chart, and that's really what it is. It's up a little bit and then mostly sideways.
Okay.
It's going to depend on whether they can reignite growth. And again, speculate wildly. And like, if I really knew more about this, I'd be investing.
I love that you're caveating all of this. Just like
we're unhedged.
Yes, exactly, unhedged. Right.
I there's been a lot of talk in the last 10 years about China's the bubble that has never burst.
Right.
Right. And I think there's a belief among some Western investors that, you know, financial bubbles are like gravity and they have to, you know, have a spectacular deleveraging and pop. And it's a 2008 style
sure.
dramatic event. I think the in the Chinese situation, you could have something different where ultimately the losses from having too much debt do need to be allocated somewhere. But they have a lot of room to do that. Mm-hmm. Where that ultimately shows up, those growth, because someone has to take the loss. And that means a bad quarter, a bad year for that company. And that ultimately shows up in how quickly the economy is growing.
Sure. Okay. So we've got China. We've got U.S. banks. What else?
Crypto. Is it going to come back?
Right. Filecoin. Spiegelcoin. Scamcoin. Right.
I'm buying Spiegelcoin.
Yeah, that's right. I think I have to. I think it's part of our job.
Yeah, contractually obligated to buy Spiegelcoin. Yeah. That's how he's pumping up the price.
Yeah, exactly.
Getting the whole FT staff to buy it. I guess the question here is the crypto winter going to be over?
Right.
Because
Bitcoin has fallen, what? It was...
Yeah, it was down like to 15, I want to say 15,000 at the bottom.
Right.
It's back up now, I think 25, 27,000. It's recovered, a good amount.
Yeah.
The market's very thin. It's mm-hmm. not a ton of people that are trading this asset.
Just for context, what was it at its height? So it's 15,000, 20,000.
I want to say 70,000.
70,000.
So somewhere
it's like a
ballpark 70,000.
So it's like a bad, bad thing.
And that's, I think, exactly why it's going to be harder to see the sort of 2021 Bitcoin bubble that we saw.
Yep.
Because the people that have looked at the sort of loss profile, there have been the majority of people that held Bitcoin by some studies have lost money on it. Those people skew younger. They skew disproportionately people of color. A lot of the kind of the base of people that had bought into Bitcoin and pumped it up in that kind of final, you know, we're putting ads on the Super Bowl, Larry David's pumping up crypto. That era, I think enough people have been burned that you're not going to see a full reinflation the way you did in 2021. Obviously, monetary policies changed as well.
Yep.
Low interest rates were a huge help to Bitcoin, and that's really no longer
the case. That's gone. That's long, long gone. Okay. So crypto, U.S. banks, China. For your last wild speculation, what do you got?
Yeah, last wild speculation. I don't know. I think this AI rally, it's ChatGPT is on everyone's lips.
Can't stop hearing about
AI. I can't go do it. Can we stop? Can we all agree to not talk about it?
Just like a day. In fact, we're doing it now. So.
We're doing it right now. Yeah. It pervades. It's like the old Trump rule, right? You can't go any conversation without it just appearing somewhere.
Yep.
I think I'm not a tech analyst. I don't really know exactly what the applications are going to be. But the stock market performance has been, I think, really hard to believe. The entire market in the U.S. is being propped up by five or six stocks that are all AI-centric.
Yeah.
So NVIDIA, Microsoft, Google, these guys.
Yep.
If you take those out of the market, the market's down actually quite a bit. Not a ton, but, you know, single-digit percentage
less
points
impressive.
Down this year.
Yeah, it's much less impressive. Yes.
Much less impressive. And so when you have that kind of one theme, that one hype being the thing propping up the market, I don't know if that's necessarily sustainable. I also think investors are the worst people at assessing the potency of technology.
Yeah.
They're not really, in some ways, it's not their wheelhouse. So I think, like in the Japan story, you might see an overshoot and a correction, which isn't to say AI is not for real. But I think it is to say that, maybe you don't want to buy the AI stock rally toward the tail end. Then again, though, maybe you're getting in early on Amazon. I think that's what a lot of people are hoping, at least.
Ethan is not allowed to give stock.
None of this is... Actually, you should... I'm a contrarian indicator. Do the opposite of what I say. You'll make money.
Yeah. Ethan, I think we're all excited for your podcast. It's Unhedged again. You can find it June 13th, wherever you find your podcasts, on FT.com, I think.
FT.com, yeah. All the podcast apps, wherever you get your podcast now.
Good to have you on the podcast family.
Thanks so much, Mark.
I want to thank Ethan. I want to thank all our guests. I want to thank our audience. I want to thank a bunch of other people for the podcast recording that we're doing. Cheryl Brumley, the global head of audio, our executive producer, Topher Forges, producer Sonia Hudson, Alec Russell, who kindly introduced us before, our guest Peter, Janine, Ethan, our engineer Sam Giovinco, the folks at FT Live and the Kennedy Center, and our great audience. Thanks again.
That was a special live episode of the FT News Briefing recorded at FT Weekend Fest in Washington, D.C. a few weeks ago. And just as a reminder, you can listen to Ethan Wu's new podcast Unhedged starting Tuesday, June 13th, wherever you get your podcasts. The Briefing will be back tomorrow morning with the latest business news.
The latest episode of The Next Five podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind,
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vodari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, professor of digital creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next Five wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.
Hi, this is Matt.
And Sean.
From Two Black Guys.
With good credit. From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.